Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 57. Satyajit murdered, and the jewel returned. Text number 5. Evam bina matisthabhyam satyaditam satama sayanam avadhilobhat sapapakshina jivitah evam bina matisthabhyam Satyajittam satamah Sayanam avadhilobhat Sapapakshina jivitah Evam bina matisthabhyam Satyajittam satamah Sayanam avadhilobhat Sapapakshina jivitah Satyajitam Satyajit Asattamah the most wicked Sayanam sleeping Avadit killed Lobat out of greed Saha he Papaha sinful Shina diminished Jivitaha, whose lifespan? Translation. His mind, thus influenced by their advice, wicked Satadanva murdered Satyajit in his sleep simply out of greed. In this way, the sinful Satadanva shortened his own lifespan.
according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the word Asatamaha indicates that Satadanva was basically evil-minded and a firm hater of Satrajit. And I'll just read the next one, the next verse as well, the next two. Srinam Bikroshamananam Krandantinam Manatavat Hatva Pasunsanikavan Manimadaya Jagmivan. As the women of Satyajit's palace screamed and helplessly wept, Satadanda took the jewel and left like a butcher after he has killed some animals. Satchavama chapitaram hatam viksha sacharapita vihalapat tata tateti hatasmiti uyiti. When Satchavama saw her dead father, she was plunged into grief, lamenting, "My father, my father, oh, I am killed." She fell unconscious. Report. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Satchabhama's anguished feelings and words at the death of her father were prompted by Lord Krishna's pastime potency, Lila Shakti. To prepare for the Lord's violent reaction against Satadanda, So, as the previous verses in this chapter, Akrura and Kritavarma, who are actually devotees, right? Pure devotees of the Lord, went to Satadanva and they said, "Why not take the Shamantaka jewel?" So, Satyajit promised his jewel-like daughter to us, but then gave her to Krishna instead, contemptuously neglecting us. So why should Satyajit not follow his brother's path? So Akrura and Kritavarma, two pure devotees of the Lord, have gone to Satadanva and encouraged him. And Satadanva has then, influenced by their advice, he himself is a very wicked person. He has actually murdered Satyajit in his sleep out of greed. And this is the women, of course, in the palace have screamed and helplessly wept while Satadanda took the jewel and left. And Satchabhama, of course, seeing her dead father, is plunged into grief. So, of course, this all came about because Satyajit himself, who was a devotee of the sun god, was given this beautiful Shamantaka jewel, which produced 170 pounds of gold every day. So Krishna advised him that he should give that jewel to Ugrasena, but he didn't. He just didn't even take much notice of Krishna's advice at all, kept it himself. Satyajit, of course, is living in Dwarka with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But somehow there's that lack of faith that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will provide everything he needs, even though he's living in Dwarka. Krishna has said that the jewel should be given to Ugrasena, who was the king. He was ruling over that whole province. Actually, Ugrasena was the ruler of the world, basically, from that position. And Krishna said to give that jewel to Ugrasena, knowing that Ugrasena used everything in the service of Krishna. Krishna was quite happy that he didn't think that Satyajit spiritually should have that jewel, that wealth. But he was quite happy that his devotee Ugrasena could have that jewel, and it would actually be for everyone's benefit, because he considered that Ugrasena is Krishna conscious. Previously, Ugrasena, how did he come to, if you imagine what sort of pious deeds you would have to perform to become the ruler of Krishna's most opulent dwarka kingdom. Actually, in his previous life, going back in the Sakya Yuga, in the first millennium, he was King Marut. And King Marut, he performed sacrifices to please Krishna. And those sacrifices were so elaborate, so opulent. He put so much into these sacrifices to please Krishna that it's described that no one has ever performed such sacrifices, and no one ever will equal the sacrifices performed by King Marut. We sometimes set up a little fire jugya with our little bricks and bucket of sand and what have you. So his jugya area was 40 miles. 40 miles, the distance. There were 500 brahmanas needed to perform the jugya. And of course, when those brahmanas came, and other inviters were invited, tens of millions of other brahmanas came. They poured so much ghee into this huge sacrificial fire that Agni Dave got a bit upset in his tummy from drinking so much rasa, soma rasa. I've had enough. So it was an opulent sacrifice, and he used to do that. So Lord Vishnu was so pleased that he appeared before King Marut, and he said, "I will, you have pleased me by your sacrifices so much that I will give you any benediction that you ask for me." And Maharaj Marut said, I won't be asking you for any benediction, because that is like a fool trying to, a fool who digs a well just before he comes to the Ganges River. If you're just a few paces away from the Ganges River, why would you go to so much trouble to dig a well? And there's vast Ganga. So in this way, he understood. He said, the only thing, I will not take any benediction. The only thing I want is that within my heart I never forget your lotus feet. So Krishna said, yes, that is That is the nature of my pure devotees, that you would ask for something like that. But still, because I'm so pleased, I really want you to take something, some benediction. And so he said, so be it. But to please the Lord, he said, I pray that you allow a part of Vaikuntha Loka to appear here on earth, and that I will be able to reside there in your association along with your devotees. And therefore, you know, Krishna said, so be it, that in 27 millenniums from now, your benediction will be fulfilled. And so Krishna actually took you know, a portion of Vaikuntha and he placed it there, and that became Dwarka, and King Marut later took birth as Ugrasena. So he was you know, a pure devotee of the Lord, who the pure devotees of the Lord, of course, they don't, all they want is to serve Krishna. And even if Krishna offers them, you know, so many benedictions and even liberation, they, you know, their only real interest, they're not happy to accept anything unless it pleases Krishna. Their only real interest is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. So, you know, Krishna was quite happy that if you give, you know, this gem to Ugrasena, you know, he's not going to be bewildered by it at all. He's going to use it in the service of, you know, all the Vaishnavas, in the service of the Lord, like that. Whereas Krishna could understand that, you know, it was not very good that Satyajit had it. He's that same consciousness was not there. Now Satyajit, of course, he should have just immediately handed that over. Because in the same way that Ugrasena, you know, was prepared to just give up all his opulence just to please the Lord, but, you know, he understood that this, if the Supreme Lord is pleased, then all benedictions follow automatically, even if you don't want them. But Satyajit didn't have that mentality. He thought, no, you know, I have to look after myself. I'll keep this Shamantaka jewel and I will get all this gold. Right? So there was some, you know, that is fearfulness, that somehow we have to maintain ourselves in this world. And generally, well, specifically actually, as soon as we forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then immediately we become fearful, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But as soon as we forget that we're being protected and maintained by Krishna, then we immediately become fearful, full of anxiety. And therefore we take shelter of, you know, so many different things that we feel that will protect us, just like Satyajit did. He took shelter of you know, the Shaman Takajula. Instead of taking shelter of Krishna, he took shelter, because there's that fearfulness. People take shelter of, you know, so many different personalities, their strength, their wealth, you know, their fame, you know, big houses, big nations, big armies, nuclear weapons. We see in this world that people are taking shelter of so many things because they're fearful of how they will maintain themselves and survive and, you know, get everything they want. But if they remembered or understood the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that fearfulness would immediately disappear, and then we wouldn't have to spend so much money on weapons. Imagine, just how many billions of dollars is spent uselessly on weapons because of that one factor of a lack of Krishna consciousness, where people become fearful. So if people didn't become fearful, they wouldn't, you know, that they would be able to live in peace with each other. So this material world, the nature of this material world is that the material energy, people are being carried along on the material energy, just like you know, a passenger is carried along on a vehicle, and that people are being taken from one body to another. They're being killed in so many different ways, and they end up in higher planetary systems, and then lower species of life, and they're going up and down and up and down like this, because the nature of the material world is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They give the example that the material energy in this place, in the material world, the purpose is not to kill people. It's not that if people lose their Krishna consciousness, that therefore they are obliterated, evaporated. They're just wiped out of existence by God. If someone disobeys God, then he just obliterates them and is wiped out of existence forever. That's not what the material energy does. The material energy is more like, sometimes they used to have prisoners, and they would take the prisoners and they would dunk their head in water, and then they would lift them up, and then they would dunk them in there, in the water like that, and they would lift them up, and they would take a breath of air, and just enough to cause them that they would be oh, I'm going to die, and they'd be so fearful, and they'd be struggling, and then down they go, and up. So that's what the material energy does. It's sort of like a ceremonial, unceremonious dunking, of the living entities. And my father used to tell a joke about that. I don't want to tell it anymore. But want to tell it? What's that? He used to tell me this joke that this person went to hell, and the Lord of Hell said, "All right, we're going to get you to choose your punishment." And he said, "What's behind that door?" So he looked behind the door, and he saw that all these people were like boiling in oil and things like that. Ooh. He looked, he said, "Well, what's behind that door?" The door looked in there and saw that, all the people were being eaten by insects and, ferocious creatures. Ooh, what's that? So, he opened another door and he said, the last door, he said, "Well, what's in there?" So they opened the door, and they're all standing up to their necks, sort of like that, in stool and pus and urine, like that. And he said, "Oh, well, that looks okay compared to the others." Right? So anyway, he goes, "Oh, I'll go in there." So he went in there, and then the devil says, "All right, smokers, over, back on your heads." That was the hell. Anyway. So, but it's something like that in the material world, this dunking and, being picked up and dunked down to you. You can't take any more. It's you lose your energy. The material energy is a very fearful place. But if someone understands, if they're Krishna conscious, they're not fearful of the material energy, because they actually understand, well, this material energy is Krishna's energy. You know, the Lord who I'm serving, it's His energy. So, you know, why should I be fearful? You know, the material energy is fearful for people who do not see that it's the Lord's material energy. When they see it as something separate, they do not see the Lord's hand behind it, they become very fearful. But the devotees, because they do not become fearful, they have a healthy respect for the material energy. But when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you surrender unto me, then I will protect you from all your sinful reactions. I will protect you from the lashings of the material energy. So sometimes people read this and they just think, Krishna said that in the Bhagavad Gita, but I don't really sort of believe it. I sort of believe it, but in another way, I don't. So I won't really take shelter of Krishna because he probably won't protect me. So people read it in the Bhagavad Gita, but they don't actually surrender to Krishna. There's many scholars of the Bhagavad Gita, and they will tell you so many things about the Bhagavad Gita, but they have not. They may be able to scholarly, speak for hours and hours, and sound very, very intelligent and what have you, philosophical about the Bhagavad Gita, but there are those who have faith in Krishna's words, they are very, very few and far between. That they actually surrender to Krishna. Surrender has six different principles. And, one of those principles of surrender is to always feel that the Lord is, my protector and maintainer. That's surrender. Without that, that surrender, then one is always fearful. That process, yes. Krishna says that he will protect me. I will become his devotee. He will maintain me. He will protect me. So surrender means I accept that, and I will practice that in my life. So that is surrender. And for when a devotee surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna does take charge of that devotee's life. Srila Prabhupada sort of commenting on that, he says, actually, Krishna arranges the devotee's life in such a way that they have no option except to come to Krishna. So, we say to people, chant Hare Krishna. And if someone chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra sincerely, that's what will happen. That actually Krishna will arrange. He gives instructions within the heart so that they can understand, how Krishna is guiding them and how they can advance spiritually. And at the same time, Krishna makes arrangements that they have no other choice except to come to Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada, he says, I have my personal experience. He said that I never ever expected that I would take sannyas. He said, I tried my hardest to remain in the material world. And he said that several times Krishna smashed me again and again. And he said, so I had no option. He said, but now I'm happy. He said, in the beginning I didn't quite understand what Krishna was doing. He said, but now I understand, the supreme mercy that he was actually giving me, and now, I'm he was giving a lecture in 1966, speaking on the Bhagavad Gita, 8:14. And so Srila Prabhupada describes it, you know, that is what Krishna does. He, you know, he makes that arrangement for his devotee. When a devotee wants to surrender to Krishna, but at the same time they have some other, you know, foolish things in their heart. Of course, you know, in hearing these words of Srila Prabhupada, we should always understand that that is Leela Shakti. That is Krishna putting his pure devotees into a situation for our instruction. It is not for the purification of Srila Prabhupada, who is a Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated devotee. But, you know, Srila Prabhupada, of course, in his humility, you know, always presenting himself as an ordinary devotee, but he is Nitya Siddha devotee, and this is Krishna's Leela Shakti. He is engaging in, you know, Lord Chaitanya in his extension of his Sankirtan pastimes with pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada. So one should not think that, you know, Prabhupada is an ordinary person being smashed by the material energy as we are. But otherwise, how can we understand if we don't have the example of these great devotees? So, what Krishna does is, if someone has, you know, they desire that, yes, I would like to surrender to Krishna, but at the same time, that devotee has other desires that I will also enjoy the material world at that, then what Krishna does is he smashes that devotee. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada said that, he yelled. He smashes the devotee! He yelled two or three times really loud. He, you know, like to make the point that Krishna doesn't muck around. He really gonna smash. So this is Krishna's special mercy. Sometimes we see that, you know, devotees of Krishna, they do end up in, you know, some unusual circumstances. They don't always end up materially opulent, where you see that those who worship Lord Shiva, you know, generally they worship, and other demigods like that, they would end up quite opulent. You know, if you worship Lord Shiva, you know, people get to smoke ganja. As, you know, Allen Ginsberg, very famous sort of 60s guru type person, he was, Prabhupada said, he was a devotee of Lord Shiva. He used to smoke his ganja, you know, pray, material enjoyment. But, you know, the irony is, actually, Maharaj Parikit asked Sukadeva Goswami, he said that, you know, can you explain to me why Lord Shiva, people worship him to become opulent, and yet Lord Shiva himself, he doesn't have opulence, in one sense, because, you know, he doesn't wear many clothes, he lives under a tree or sometimes in a mountain. You know, he lives like a yogi, very austere, and yet people approach Lord Shiva and other demigods under him, of course, and they get opulence, whereas people approach Krishna, who's the husband of the goddess of fortune, unlimited goddesses of fortune, you know, with his you know, opulent, you know, lives in Dwarka, there's hundreds of thousands, you know, it was 900,000 palaces. And, you know, we see that sometimes devotees end up, you know, materially embarrassed And so Sukadeva Goswami said, I will answer that question. That question was also put to Lord Krishna by your grandfather Yudhisthira, and I'll tell you the same answer that Krishna gave to Yudhisthira. And Krishna explained to Yudhisthira, because again, you know, at that time, even personalities like Bhishma, you know, Bhishma, he was actually crying, you know, so I cannot believe how much these Pandavas have suffered. You know, they're like the greatest devotees. You know, Maharaj Yudhisthira is, you know, religion personified, is the most pious personality on the planet. And Arjuna is, you know, the Lord's personal friend. Their wife, you know, is literally the goddess of fortune, Draupadi, and yet with all their qualifications, we see that they, you know, they lost their kingdom, they were banished, they had to live in a forest, you know, wandering around in difficult circumstances for 13 years, and you know, their wife was taken off them for some time, their kingdom was taken off them. They went through so much austerities. And even Bhishma, who was, you know, a great, powerful warrior, you know, he was crying, you know, to see the difficulties. So anyway, Krishna explained to Yudhisthira Maharaj that my first duty, you know, towards my devotees is to, you know, smash their material situation so that they can surrender to me. So whereas demigods, you see here, like for instance the sun god, you know, he was quite happy to give Satrajit, a very powerful Shamantaka jewel, and you know, Krishna understood, well, you know, Satrajit, you know, he's you know, that jewel is not in the possession of the right person. That's going to cause him all sorts of trouble. But the sun god, you know, the demigods, they sometimes give benedictions. If someone, you know, earns their benediction, they give the benediction. They don't consider, is this benediction going to cause, you know, my devotee harm or anyone else any harm? They just, they've earned the benediction. There, you've got it. As Krishna is not like that. Krishna actually considers, yes, you may have earned the benediction and you may have pleased me, but you know, for your own benefit, you know, I will not award, sometimes for certain devotees, he will not award material opulence. And sometimes if they try to get material opulence or get material opulence and at the same time they're trying to surrender, he will actually smash them and take that off them. Now that's not for every devotee. But as we see with personalities like Ugrasena, you know, who Krishna is very satisfied that I can give him as much opulence, you know, as this planet has or within the universe, Ugrasena just keep, you know, churning it into performing sacrifices, Rajasuya and, you know, Ashwamedha Jagyas, and, you know, he would just make all the devotees happy like that. So, you know, Krishna's knowing, you can give devotees like that so much opulence. So in the same way that, you know, ultimately Srila Prabhupada was also awarded, you know, so much opulence. And we saw that, you know, despite the fact that, and this is where we see, you know, Srila Prabhupada obviously a Nitya Siddha pure devotee with no material desires whatsoever, but, you know, when he was, you know, in the most opulent position, which, you know, just millions of dollars coming in and so many disciples who would, you know, just, you know, his slightest wish would, you know, they would try and fulfill. So, and yet he was never tainted at all by any sort of, you know, even the slightest degree of, you know, let me enjoy even one paisa of this. So, you know, that's the nature of the pure devotees. Krishna is very happy to, you know, give them so much opulence. But in the beginning, you know, sometimes Krishna has to take that opulence off. But when a devotee does, then those obstacles are cleared away from that devotee's surrender, then there's also no obstacle in that devotee having opulence. if Krishna so desires, if that's meant for their service. So that is the nature of the devotees, is that they don't surrender to Krishna to develop love of God. There cannot be business. If we do business with God, then we cannot develop love. So Krishna does test his devotees, and he helps them to come to the position of love. He helps them, because sometimes it's seen that, you know, in our beginning stages of devotional service, there's that mood that, yes, I am worshipping Krishna very nicely, and, you know, if I get a nice wife, if I get a nice husband, then, you know, I'll keep doing my service, and, you know, if everything, you know, I get a nice position, and I become, you know, well-known, and, you know, all my illnesses are cured, and, you know, I get to travel, and this and that, yes, I will serve Krishna, you know, be very, very nice. But, you know, sometimes then if you know, those things are not there, then, you know, a devotee who hasn't risen to the point of love, who's just really doing business, then they may, you know, fall away from devotional service. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful to, you know, develop the proper mood of a devotee, and Krishna is helping us in that way, so that we are not doing business, asking for Krishna for anything other than to always remember his lotus feet and to offer him service. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, tells a very nice story in that regard about Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, who were in Vrindavan, and they were living there. And one day, Rupa Goswami, he was thinking, you know, my older brother Sanatan is such a wonderful devotee. You know, if Krishna desired, you know, if Krishna willing, I would love to, you know, prepare and offer a beautiful meal, you know, for Sanatan like that. So he was thinking like that. Anyway, then at some later stage, shortly after that, this young girl came past and said, Babaji, you know, my mother has, we performed a, you know, little festival ceremony at my mother's place at our home, and we have so many ingredients here that, you know, are left over. Perhaps, you know, we thought a saintly person like you could use them. And Rupa Goswami was thinking, I was just thinking that if I had some ingredients, you know, I could offer them, you know, cook something nice for Rupa Goswami. So he's thinking, you know, I have not seen you. Do you live here? And she said, yes, I live in this village. But, he's thinking, I have not seen you. Anyway, she, you know, he got those ingredients, and he cooked up this beautiful, you know, feast, you know, meal preparation for his brother Sanatan. And then he invited his brother. When his brother came, then he inquired, you know, we are living in this forest, in this jungle, and you know, where did you get all these, you know, wonderful ingredients to, you know, make such a nice preparation? And Rupa replied that, you know, I was thinking that, you know, if I could, by Krishna's grace, we had these nice ingredients, that I could cook some meal. And this beautiful, you know, young village girl from our village came by. And so, you know, Sanat was saying, tell me about this young girl. You know, it's very unusual. And so he was describing that she was exceptionally beautiful. You know, she was... And when he described, you know, the features of her beauty, then Sanatan could understand, oh, that was Radharani. That was Srimati Radharani. She has actually personally come and given you these nice foodstuffs. And so he was very angry. He said, what have you done to us? You have accepted service from Krishna. And you know, he was actually, you know, he began to cry. So he was very, very disturbed that, you know, somehow or another, you know, both their devotional services was destroyed, and that here they are, you know, they're dedicating their lives to try and serve Krishna with pure love, and somehow or another they had accepted service from Krishna. And so they were both, you know, very disturbed. But this is the relationship that a devotee has with Krishna, and Krishna has with his devotees, is that the devotees are always trying to serve Krishna, and, you know, Krishna is always trying to serve his devotees. But the devotees, if Krishna is offering them, you know, anything, then the devotee is taking that and using it to serve Krishna, like that. But they, you know, but Krishna is always trying to serve his devotees, but they're always trying not to accept any service, not to accept anything for their personal self, because they don't want to be doing business. They just want to be doing love. You know, they just want to be. So, you know, similarly, there was another story with Raghunath Das Goswami, who used to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You know, he would sit there for hours and hours and hours, literally, you know, and he would just chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and he was such in, you know, deep mood of loving meditation that he was just completely oblivious to everything. And one day, I think it was might have been Sanatan Goswami, he was watching Raghunath Das Goswami, he was chanting, and this tiger actually came, you know, into the area. And when Krishna, who also noticed this, he came in, he stood behind Raghunath Das Goswami, and just to make sure that that tiger was not going to cause him any difficulty. And then when that tiger, you know, left, then Krishna disappeared. But, you know, Sanatan, you know, he looked at Krishna, and Krishna looked at him. So then he went up to Raghunath Das Goswami later, and he said, you know, Krishna has personally come to protect you. You have to build yourself like a bhajan kutir, you know, a little hut that you can chant in so that you're protected, like this. And Raghunath Das Goswami is thinking, you know, that, you know, he didn't want to engage in any sense gratification at all under any circumstances. He just, you know, and he didn't want to detract from his service to Krishna by even building himself a little hut. It's such, you know, such advanced devotees. So anyway, on another time, Raghunath Das Goswami was chanting also, as the hot sun was, you know, pounding down. And again, Sanatan noticed that he actually thought that Raghunath Das Goswami would die because it was so hot, and you know, he was just chanting in that hot sun. And then he noticed that Srimati Radharani appeared, and she stood behind Raghunath Das Goswami, and she held her veil over him like that while he was chanting, so that, you know, the sun wouldn't beat down on him like that. So then, again, you know, after some time, when the sun had dissipated, Srimati Radharani disappeared, and again Sanatana went up to Raghunath Das Goswami. He said, "Now you've got Radharani, you know, coming to offer you service, you must build a bhajan kutir." And so Raghunath Das Goswami agreed, "Yes, we'll build a little bhajan kutir." So that was actually the beginning of, you know, the bhajan kutir. That was like sort of the start of that type of meditation. And so, you know, but you see the nature of the devotees. And the same with Arjun. You know, Arjun, here he is in the battle of Kurukshetra, has this vast, you know, army, you know, massive big army, so much greater than his own army. But he didn't say, you know, "Your God, you kill him." You know, it's like, "Your God, why are you sending me in there?" But, you know, Arjun understood after hearing Bhagavad Gita that, "You are God, I am your servant, I will fight." Like that. So, Krishna arranges circumstances for all his devotees, actually. In one sense, one may think, you know, sometimes a little bit of a weird, twisted philosophy that, well, if Krishna's God, you know, he will arrange it. But, you know, that's not the mentality of a devotee. The devotee knows, yes, Krishna can do everything, of course, but I'm not going to engage God in my service. So I will do, you know, I will do everything like that. He knows I am completely dependent on Krishna, and I cannot even do anything without Krishna's mercy. But at the same time, he does everything thinking, you know, I will not engage Krishna in my service. I will spend all my energy and time and just, you know, for the love of Krishna, the love of the Supreme Lord, the love of the spiritual master and the devotees. Then I will, you know, engage in Krishna consciousness. So that there is the mood of the devotee. And of course, a devotee who you know, surrenders to Krishna like that, they're not under the jurisdiction of the material energy. They actually come under the jurisdiction of the you know, Krishna personally takes a hand, you know, through his spiritual potencies. He personally takes a hand in their life to make sure that their Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. And as he said in that verse, Bhagavad Gita 8:14, I think it is, 13:14, that Krishna says that for a devotee who's always thinking of me, and a devotee is always thinking of me because he's always engaged in my service, then, you know, I become very easily available like that. So when a devotee engages in devotional service and they're always trying to think of Krishna in love, then Krishna becomes very easily available. He guarantees, you know, that they will get his association, they will go, you know, ultimately to the supreme eternal destination. That's guaranteed. And we see that by Krishna's Leela Shakti, Krishna has many, many different energies. He is described here in relation to Satyabhama that he has his Leela Shakti. So by Krishna's Leela Shakti, he arranges certain pastimes with his various devotees for our instruction. As we, you know, we see in the case of Srila Prabhupada, how Srila Prabhupada was apparently smashed by Krishna, you know, so that he could, you know, fully take up preaching like that. It's a pastime between Krishna and his pure devotee. And, you know, here, Satyabhama also, you know, that is described here, that she has these great anguish feelings. You know, she was plunged into grief, lamenting, my father, oh, I am killed, and she fell unconscious. So, as Jiva Goswami describes, you know, these activities of, you know, Satyabhama showing what apparently looks like, you know, material, you know, anxiety, material fear, material suffering, is actually under the Krishna's Leela Shakti, his spiritual potencies. And later we see in this pastime here where, I won't say too much, but later on, after the killing, Krishna kills Saradamba, that Balaram goes to Mithila and Krishna comes back to Dwarka looking for the Shyamataka jewel. When Balaram's in Dwarka, he is teaching Duryodhana how to fight with a club. So the relationship between Duryodhana and Balaram is a really nice example of, you know, Krishna's Leela Shakti. Because generally when we think of Duryodhana, we think of no one likes Duryodhana, you know, he's like this. Everyone, you know, everyone thinks, oh, Duryodhana, he caused so much trouble to the Pandavas, you know. You know, the whole war, he's so mean to everyone, like that. Actually, he was a great devotee of Lord Balaram. And in his previous life, when it was time for Krishna and Balaram's descent, Bhumi, she had, the earth personified, she had approached Brahma. And Brahma had actually, with some of the demigods, they actually went through a little hole in the universe, which was put there by Lord Vamanadeva, and they went through there, and there he saw this was actually told to Duryodhana by his spiritual master. There they saw Sankarshan, and on Sankarshan's lap was Vrindavan and all the forests of Vrindavan, like that. And he said to Brahma, go into one of the forests. And Brahma went into one of the forests and there saw Radha and Krishna. And then he told him about the, you know, the burden of the earth. And Krishna said, you know, that you can all return, that I will descend. And he instructed Balaram, who was there in his form as a thousand-headed Sesha, an unto Sesha. He said, you can also, you descend, you know, first through Devaki and then through the womb of Rahini. And so Balaram went from there, and then he went to Batala Loka, where he met with many of his associates, and there were many Naga Shaktis, or like the wives of the snakes, because on Batala Loka they have sort of snake-like bodies, and they had a desire that they wanted to enjoy Rasa dance with Balaram. And he said, you know, you take birth on earth and I will, you know, fulfill your desire. And many of those, of course, later became Balaram's particular gopis. And then there was one, you know, king of that whole area. His name was Kali. And he said, you know, Balaram, you know, if you go to the material world, you know, I don't think I can, you know, I don't think I could bear this separation. You know, and like this. So he said, you know, to Kali that you will also take birth, and you will become Duryodhana, and I will come later, and I will teach you how to, you know, fight with the club. So you see, throughout all the different pastimes, that, you know, Balaram was always quite partial to Duryodhana. You know, whenever there was some big battle, Balaram would appear and he would, you know, protect him, you know, like that. And so, you know, you see this throughout the Christian pastime. So Balaram was actually Duryodhana was a devotee of Balaram. And so therefore, you see how, yet he took the form of this sort of demoniac nature and engaged in so many activities to teach us what not to do. You know? And also, you know, to set this scene. Because to sort of take any part in the pastimes with Krishna and Balaram, with the Supreme Lord, is very special. Even to take the part of demons, to take any part at all when Krishna performs his pastimes, is a great benediction. Because you see that even the demons, you know, that thought of Krishna, you know, with hatred and what have you, but because they're always thinking of Krishna, ultimately they're also, you know, liberated. So this Lila Shakti, you see here that one of Balaram's devotees, you know, he appears in Krishna's pastimes, engages in so many activities, But the Lord arranges all his activities, so ultimately, you know, he enjoys the association with the Lord and ultimately goes back to the Lord at that. So Krishna has so many different energies like that. And the point being that the pastimes of the Lord, they're unlimited. There are millions and millions of pastimes. You know, if you want to hear about the pastimes of Ram, about the pastimes of Krishna, you could go on hearing constantly, you know, 24 hours a day, you know, for lifetimes, and you'll barely hear just, you know, a particle of them. As Krishna's Leela Shakti, making so many arrangements with his devotees, and his devotees take part in the pastimes, and ultimately they're all totally looked after. So, if someone surrenders to Krishna, who is the Lord of all these unlimited pastimes, then one has nothing to fear, that being the point. And sometimes, you know, the other point is that sometimes that we see the Lord's devotees in what apparently seems like a fearful or a terrible situation. That is the arrangement of the Lord. And we should not think, oh, you know, I am fearful to surrender to Krishna because I have seen some of his devotees in these difficult situations. Alright? Sometimes that is because Krishna is smashing a neophyte devotee, and sometimes that is because for Krishna's Leela Shakti, the devotee just, you know, couldn't bear to not be with Krishna. You know, and he'd rather be in this world with Krishna as a demon than to be in the spiritual world without Krishna's association. That, you know, that's the sort of mood. But, the point being that if we ever see devotees somehow in difficulty, we should understand, you know, that Krishna is always, somehow or another, whether it be pure devotees or young devotees, looking after those devotees. And they have nothing to fear. They actually have nothing to fear. There is no fear in surrendering to Krishna. But if one does not surrender to Krishna, then one is just under the grips of the material energy, and that certainly is a very fearful situation. I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions, okay, I'll just stir it up the hornet's nest. Now go on. Yeah.
About this point of surrender.
When Mother Earth approached Brahma, at that time Lord Brahma was listening to a musical recitation on Satyaloka, And you know, the pastime, what happened was Revati, Balaram's consort, her father took himself and Revati to Satyaloka, you know, way, way back, you know, many millenniums ago, and he approached Brahma for Ravata was actually the son of Anata, I think his name was, who was a very great devotee, who also ruled over, you know, Dwarka. But Ravata took his daughter Ravati to Lord Brahma, and at that time Lord Brahma was hearing this recitation, this singing and music by the Gandharvas. And you know, just a few moments went by, but then when the recitation stopped, Ravata said, "I would like, you know, you to choose a husband." And he said, "Well, you know, millions and millenniums have gone past while you have been here, but just now, you know, Lord Balaram has appeared in this world. If you take that, your daughter can actually, you know, marry Lord Balaram." You know, there's a little bit more to the story. But so the Lord Brahma that Bhumi is described by Śrīla Viśvanatha Chakravarti Thakura, and also in various, you know, Garga Samhita and what have you. She approached Brahma who resides on Mount Meru, not the Brahma who resides in Satyaloka that we know. Because the Brahma we know who resides in Satyaloka, as we know, he never got to see the Lord. You know, he stood on the shore of the Milk Ocean and was unable to see the Lord. But the Brahma, for instance, like in it's said that also in you know, the various dharms, that Brahma protects the dharms. But that Brahma is an incarnation of the Lord. He's not the same Brahma who resides on Satyaloka. So similarly, this Brahma who, you know, actually went through the whole in the universe to Vaikuntha, he was, you know, sort of different Brahmas. That. So there's, you know, one description describing, so as we know, the Brahma we know, he was busy at that time doing something, and there was another Brahma who went through the universe or on the universe like that. Yeah, Bhumi approached, no, same universe, but as I explained, Brahma is actually an incarnation of the Lord, and he resides in that transcendental form within the universe in various places, one of them being Mount Meru, one of them being the various holy dharms, and then his expansion is the Brahma that, you know, we know. And sometimes if there's not a living entity suitable for the position of Brahma, then that Lord, that Krishna himself as Brahma, the Lord, takes that position himself. So there's the Lord Brahma and there's the Jiva Brahma. Yes, but still that they still reside within the universe at the same time. What's that? She went with her father. Yeah. Her name originally was Jyoti Shmati. Shrimad Bhagavatam. For instance, if you read the Śrīla Viśvanatha Chakravarti Thakura's commentary to the first chapter, 10th canto, first chapter, text number 17, he describes in his commentary there, confirming what is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto, 3rd chapter, that text 32, that Brahma was actually listening to a musical recital at that time when, you know, Bhumi approached Brahma. And therefore the Acharyas say that because it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that Brahma was busy at that time, that that was not there was one Brahma there, but there was a different Brahma who actually, you know, saw the Lord. Yeah, that was Satchaloka. That was the one. That was the one. That's described in the 9th canto. Yeah, you read that in the 9th canto. He went there with his daughter. That's described in the 9th canto. And because the Acharyas say, because Brahma was, you know, busy at that particular time, it was actually the other Brahma who resides in Mount Meru who went through the whole of the universe, and the one that Bhumi approached as well. Kali, yeah, not Kali personified. He is different Kali.
Is it the same
principle
as Kali that
Krishna
is
to him? No. Yeah. You know, he has a similar name to other personalities. There are other personalities with the name Kali, but you know, he was one of a very powerful king on Batala Loka who was, you know, and at that place in Patala Loka, various associates of Lord Balaram were residing before his appearance. Sometimes, yeah. One of the names of Balaram is Patala. That's one of the names of Balaram because he stays there. Actually, he stays on, you know, a lot of those lower planetary systems. As you know, the lower planetary systems, many of the personalities who reside there have snake-like bodies, which is sort of, you know, really a feature known to Balaram in his Anantasesha form, where he does assume that snake-like body. So they sort of have quite a, you know, there's an intimate relationship between himself and the residents of the lower planetary systems. Child, all good, should have probably.